It's too hot for me to schlep over. Wait until winter, God willing. Okay, I'll do the schlep during the winter, but during this weather?
No.
I'm not walking the 10 miles.
Come check the Evo.
Huh?
Come check the Evo.
It's only two.
Yeah. Okay, let's everybody come on in and be nice and behave. We have visitors in the place, so let's put on our good behavior. We're all privileged to have Rabbi Zevi Saunders and his wife Erica with us today. God willing, tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday. They will be with us downtown tomorrow evening for Friday night services and downtown Shabbos morning. I decided to take it easy, not on the rabbi, but on the Rebbetzin.
I'm grateful.
I suspect Eric is going to be even more grateful. It can get warm. And we have asked Rabbi Saunders to come by, spend some time with us, because we're looking to fill a very, very important series of rabbinic roles within the community, one being really helping out with the conduct of our Shabbos and Yom Tov services, laning and such. But also, quite frankly, I would like to see us engage in a little bit more growth, and that implies if you're going to do it, you need to do it seriously, and you need to have some dedicated resource for outreach. There are a lot of people we all know rattling around town, and I'd like to see if we can start to touch and reach those people and bring them closer to our faith. Given that it wasn't really possible, practical, in the scheme of everything, for the Saunders to spend part of Shabbos with you all here in the Minyan House, I thought the best compromise we could do would be to ask the rabbi to come, say a few words, take some questions, and then I can see we've got some beneficent refreshments here, opportunity to socialize, catch up with them, and just talk and see what everything is going. So with that, I'm going to stop talking. I'll ask Rabbi.
Would you prefer me to stand, or can I sit?
Whichever you're comfortable.
Okay. If you don't mind, I prefer to sit.
Make it a bit more informal. Thank you very much. This is probably the only time I might get to publicly state our gratitude for your hospitality, for bringing us over and showing us Southern hospitality. Since I've got off the plane, I've not been wanting for nothing, as they say in England. I think you might have thought I was the chief rabbi or something, but I'm not. They've selected a successor to him. And here I am, very grateful to be here and honored. However, I am a bit apprehensive that you might not be able to understand my choice of vernacular, because, pardon me, I speak the Queen's English. So if you don't understand, please feel free to sort of try and ask me to explain things again. The aim of my class tonight is that people try and understand, obviously, what I'm trying to say. So if that's, I walked into a shop a couple of weeks ago in Brooklyn. I lived there for 15 months, but I'm still looked upon as a bit of a pariah with my language, and I asked them for an ice lolly, and they looked at me as if I was crazy, and then my wife, once she finished laughing, came up to me and said, it's actually called a popsicle. But I still use the Hoover and open the boot and all these sort of things. So I'm learning. Those of you who have seen my website, which I understand a few of you have said you've seen my website, you might not recognize me, but now that I'm all scrubbed up, but it is actually me. And you might recognize I put my shiurim on my website, so I hope you don't mind. I am recording this, I hope, yes, but I don't need to record the questions at the end, so you don't need to worry if anybody has any objections. I'm not quite sure what I'd do if they did, but so I'm just letting you know, because apparently here the law is that you have to let everybody know if you are sort of recording something or not. So it's recording. In Judaism and Jewish life, we know that things don't happen for nothing. There's always a reason. Things are thought out by God years and decades and millennia ahead. And I think it's very apt that I should be here this Shabbos trying to, if you like, show off my talents and myself, because this Shabbos is known as Shabbat Chazon. Now, it's called Shabbat Chazon because it refers to the first word of the Haftorah, which we read straight after Leining, which starts off, it's the third installment of the trilogy of special readings of the prophet that we read between the fast of Tammuz and Tisha B'Av. If you like, I like to call it the 3 weeks of doom. And then from after Tisha B'Av, we read the 7 weeks. I was trying to think of a flashy word for seven, but we couldn't come up with one. Anyway, the 7 weeks where we... 7 weeks of comfort, where the Haftorahs, we read about portions of the prophets that are comforting us over the loss of the temples in Jerusalem. So this week, as I said, is known as Shabbos Chazon. Always happens to be the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av, the fast of Av. We always read this portion of the prophets. I'm going to discuss it perhaps later. And it starts with the words, Isaiah chapter 1. What was the word you said for Isaiah here?
Isaiah,
sorry, I knew I'd get it wrong. Isaiah chapter 1 starts with the words Chazon Yishayahu, which literally means the vision of Yishayahu, his prophecy. And I think it's very apt that this week, and now has come up with a new vision, a new idea of what you would like to do in this community. So here on the Shabbos of Vision, I'm here trying to hopefully fulfill your vision of what you want to do in this community. So I'd like to speak a bit about this week's Sedra, Parshas Devarim, which hopefully I will tie in, link it up to Tisha B'Av and the period of mourning that we were in. Hopefully you will not find the link too tedious. So, here it goes. This week's Sedra starts the fifth and final book of Moses. And perhaps we can say it is as close to an autobiography of Moshe Rabbeinu's time as leader of the Jewish people as you could possibly wish to get. As the rabbi mentioned between Mincha and Maariv, doesn't mention Moses spoke to God, God gave commandments. That's been in the four previous books. We're on the cusp of going into the land of Israel. The 40-year sojourning in the desert is almost at the climax. 37 days prior to Moshe Rabbeinu's departing from this world. And he's trying, if you like, to admonish the Jewish people for the things that he believed they did incorrectly during his time as leader. We see things through Moshe Rabbeinu's eyes, whereas the rest of the Torah, we see it, if you like, as a story, perhaps, you could say. God is telling Moses things, or the Torah is describing that the things that the Jews did. But this week, and for the next couple of weeks, we see things through the eyes of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moses is telling us in his words how he felt, how he viewed the various episodes that are discussed and ensue in the following week's sedras. Fascinating insight into he, the leader, the famous Moshe Rabbeinu, how he thought at the particular times. But to me, there is one passage which is particularly striking, fascinatingly interesting. Just around Sheni, a few pasukim in, Moshe Rabbeinu comes up with the stark admission that you probably would never hear a leader say, Loi ochal levadi se'es eschem, which loosely means, I wasn't able to cope alone. Okay, 600,000 people between the age of 20 and 60. So if you assume, men rather, if you assume there's the same amount of women, it's 1.2 million. Kids, people below 20 and 60, below 20, above 60. Let's do a rough estimate of 1.5 million Jews in the desert. Yeah, there's a lot of people. But Moshe Rabbeinu, he ascended the lofty heights of heaven, not just once, not even twice, but thrice. Three times he ascended to heaven. As he testifies about himself in a couple of weeks' time, Lechem lo ochalti, I didn't even eat bread. Mayim lo shalsisi, I didn't even drink water. All right, I know it's not so hot up there. The higher you go, the colder it gets, all right. Aboim yoiv, aboim loila, for 40 days and 40 nights. That's for 120 days of his life he spent in heaven, basking in God's glory, sitting on one-on-one time with God. I've been given one-on-one time with the president and with the rabbi, but Moshe Rabbeinu got one-on-one time with the master of legions, God himself. An amazing feat. Fascinating to be able to witness the man going up the mountain, the clouds coming down, him ascending, and he's gone. But best him, 40 days later, he's back. He's alive. He survived. Not once, not twice, thrice. And he's turning around and saying, I couldn't cope. It's too much for me. I can't do this anymore. I can't. I can't do it alone. Can we really think that? It doesn't seem to add up. Moshe Rabbeinu, he stood up to Paro. Paro, Pharaoh, needed threatened to kill him, and he still stood up to him. Took the Jews out. Split the sea. Obviously, God did the miracles, but he chose Moshe to start off the miracles, to predict the miracles. This man had godliness oozing out of his veins. And we say about him, he says, you know what, I couldn't cope. I've got to go see a shrink. Does that make sense? Can we say that? It's not me saying it. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying it about himself. Very odd, very strange. And then he says, three psukim later, he said to God, Eicha esa levadi, how can I cope on myself, by myself, tochachem or masachem, berivachem? You're driving me mad. You're driving me up the pole. I don't know if you have these expressions here, but you're making me meshuggah. You're always going on, as Rashi explains, every time you try to judge them, they came back with counterclaims, more witnesses. Always being very skeptical. Where's he going? What's he doing? He couldn't cope. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't cope. If he couldn't go, why did God choose him? He was chosen. God singled him out with the story of the sheep and the burning bush. He was singled out to lead. And he turned around and said, I couldn't cope. If you like, he wants to abdicate his responsibilities. What's going on over here? So the answer is, I slightly misled you to try and build up to this point. Slightly misled you, not much, slightly. Because yes, the idea Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to say is I cannot cope. And the Targum translates it, Eini yochol lisbol, I can't cope. I think when you've written lisbol means I can't, it's too painful for me. Eini yochol lisbol otcha, it's too painful for me, am I right? Then so the Targum says, it was too painful for Moshe to cope. But the literal translation of the word Eicha Esa and Loi Ucha Levadi Sa'ez is to lift up. We say in a few weeks' time, Ki Esa Shomayim Yodi, I lift up my hands to heaven. V'amarti Cha Anochi Yolam, and God says, I live forever. We say when God took us out of Egypt, he said, V'Esa Eschem An Kamfei Nushorim, I carried you on eagle's wings. So the actual word Esa literally means carrying, or raising up, or lifting up. So now we can try and interpret this idea slightly differently. Moshe Rabbeinu was not saying, I cannot cope. It's too much. I gotta go see a shrink. Who do you recommend? What's his prices? No. He was saying, I cannot lift you up by myself. I cannot carry you. I cannot raise you up anymore. I need help. He loved the Jewish people so much. He said, I need help. Didn't say, I'm worried about my own cover, my own honor, my own glory. That wasn't what it was about. I don't care about that. I want everyone to be raised up as high as possible. And in that way, if you like, Rabbi Davis is comparable to Moshe Rabbeinu. He needs
He'd help. Lo yichalavadi se'eis eschem. It doesn't matter if you can't do it yourself. It doesn't matter to ask for help if all you are interested in is raising people up, raising the yidden. I'm sure he's comparable to Moshe Rabbeinu in other ways.
Just by name. That's where it ends.
But Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, I can't do it alone. Yes, I can cope with you, I can manage, I can do fine. Put my feet up at the end of a long, hard day and go to sleep. That's not what I want. I want to be able to lift you up, raise you higher. And that's what irked him so much. That's what exasperated him to the point of begging God for help. I want to be able to help you, lift you up, raise you up. Now let me ask you, throw this question open to the floor. We've said Moshe Rabbeinu now was concerned that he couldn't lift the level of the Jewish people up. Do we think that could refer spiritually from their Torah observance or their observance of mitzvahs? Or do you think it could be physically or mentally or emotionally? What do the consensus of opinion? What do people think? Anybody want to offer any ideas? Okay. You might think it means spiritually. Oh, Moshe Rabbeinu wants to lift them up spiritually. Wants to lift them up to greater madrigas, greater levels of Torah knowledge, greater levels of mitzvah observance. You're up, you could be right. But I would like to suggest that Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned that he couldn't get the Jewish people to get on with each other. He couldn't get them to behave better towards one another. He couldn't lift them up emotionally. Ah, where'd you get that from, Rabbi Saunders? Well, you make such bold statements. I think it's proven by the next words in the Pasuk. Moshe says, how could I lift you up by myself? I couldn't do it. In the very same pasuk, he says, Torchachem, umasa achem v'rivachem. Why couldn't I do this? Because you were too busy complaining. Here. The way it translates it here is your contentiousness, your burdens, and your quarrels. And as Rashi explained, if people came for judgment, and it looked like he was going to lose. He said, oh, wait, counterclaims, more counterclaims, summing up, no summing up, more evidence, less evidence. Always driving crazy, I'll bring more people. Your burdens and your quarrels. This refers to things between people, people who are quarreling. The burdens of judging everybody. And what is also a proof to this, what did God do? What did God tell him? I'll appoint judges. Sorry, Alofim v'sorry Meos. I'll appoint judges. Now, that's a bit strange. If he was saying he's going to raise up their level spiritually, teach them more Torah, help them observe more mitzvos, he would have appointed rabbis. He would have appointed teachers, not judges. So I think it's quite clearly proven by the juxtaposition in this pasuk and of the next pasuk that Moshe was upset and was troubled and was irked by the fact he couldn't get people to live happily with one another, to respect and to love everybody the way one should. And I would just like to develop this idea slightly further. And this is how I'm going to link it to this week's Sedra. The Gemara, the Talmud in Yuma 9a, was it 9b? 9a? No, 9b, says, why was the second temple destroyed? Was the second temple destroyed? Fair question. We're still suffering. 1967 years later, we're still suffering. Why? So the Gemara answers, Sinas chinom. Now I once saw a translation which I think is greatly appropriate for this, baseless hatred. Hatred for nothing, chinam, nothing. Because there are times it is permitted to hate somebody who wrongs you and commits a crime against you,
One is allowed to hate them. Last week, Cedra, when it talks about somebody who murders somebody, their family can get out their anger and passion by murdering the murderer. Perfectly allowed. So there are times that anger and hatred is allowed. But baseless hatred? Hatred for no reason? Hatred just because? No. That has no place in a Jewish heart. And it is because of that that the temple was destroyed, says the Gemara. And again, this was preceded by Moshe Rabbeinu. About 1,200 years earlier in the desert. I think it was 400 years to the God of Temple, 400 years for the first temple, 70 years in between, and 420 of the second. About 1,200 years earlier, he'd already flagged this up. It was already on the Jews' file. When you click on the computer, what's in your file? Oh yes, Moshe, he flagged this up already. 1,200 years ago, you couldn't get on with each other. You couldn't find it within your hearts, in your minds. And perhaps we can go as bold as to say your egos in the desert to get on with each other. You couldn't live as one nation. And it's very interesting, we touched on earlier in my introduction that this week is called Shabbos Chazon because we have the third installment of the Haftorah trilogy comes from the first pasuk, the first chapter of Isaiah. What was it? Isaiah, sorry. We call it Isaiah in England, you see, so I'm trying to get it right. Now, let me ask you, if you are going to apportion a specific chapter of the prophets to be read every single year before the Shabbos immediately preceding Tisha B'Av. Because you want to inspire people to mourn. That's the idea why we read the Haftorah, to inspire people to mourn. We read it in the tune of Eicha, the sad, dirgy tune of Eicha. It's to get you in the spirit. Oh yeah, mourning. Oh yeah, Tisha B'Av. Look what's befallen us. Get you in the mood. If I were to ask you, what type of chapter, a chapter discussing what, would you choose to discuss and to read on this Shabbos? I'm sure what would most of you say? You would say we would get a chapter that talks about the destruction of the temple. That there are chapters in Yirmiyahu, in Jeremiah, and in Malachim, Kings, that talk about the destruction of the first temple. Okay, we don't have the destruction of the second temple because that was post-prophet time. Okay, but we could read the first temple. Many chapters which talk about the physical destruction of the temple. You would have thought, yeah, that'd be a good one to read, wouldn't it? Yeah, let's choose that one. Okay, we'll fix it in. Every year we'll read Kings chapter 23 or whatever it is, Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah chapter 38 to 46, whatever the ones that talk about the actual destruction, the burning of the temple, the leading of the Jews into the exile in chains. Yeah, that would be very apt, I think, don't you? Yeah, that's what we'll choose. Okay, let's have a look. We open this week. I was going to say excited, but it's probably the one word. Getting ready to be put in our mourning frame of mind. And what do we read? We read, build it up, yes. God says how he despises the Jews. Even their keeping of Shabbos is despicable to him. He doesn't appease him anymore. All the offerings that they offer are disgusting in his eyes. These are the words of the translation. Perhaps if I read it to you, it would ring true. Here's one I didn't prepare earlier. Right. So we have words of woe, O sinful nation, people weighed down by iniquity, offspring of evil. Offspring of evil. Quite a difficult term to accept upon yourself. You're the offspring of evil. Angered the Holy One of Israel. They have turned away backward. An ox knows its owner, a donkey knows its master, but you don't. And going on in those ideas, am I satiated with elevation offerings of rams of the choicest fatted animals and the blood of bulls and sheep and he-goats? I do not desire it. You shall continue to bring a worthless meal offerings. It's worthless. Has no meaning to me. Your new moon and Shabbos callings, I cannot abide. Your assemblage, God is saying how much he's had enough with the Jews. No, you don't do it for me anymore. Had enough. If you want, I want a divorce. Nah. Counseling, it's too late for that. That's it. I hate you, as it were. Good a thought, okay. Building up, yeah, you're evil, the offspring of evil. I can't take your offerings anymore. And I'm going to destroy the temple. Am I right? That's what we expect to be building up to, yes? No. And it goes on, when you spread your hands in prayer, I will hide my eyes from you. Then God goes, learn to do good. Seek justice. Strengthen the victim. Do justice for the orphan. Take up the cause of the widow. Wait a minute. I thought we were going to talk about the destruction of the temple. I thought we were going to say the doom, the impending doom. No. God is calling the Jews to have good justice for the orphans, for the widows. And he goes on to beg them to repent and to do teshuva and to change their evil ways of how they cheat injustice and how they favor the rich and powerful over the poor and oppressed. And it's very interesting to think through. They chose this week of all weeks to really get you in the spirit of mourning. Not really much mention about the temple. Destruction of Jerusalem in passing reference. It's a call to do tshuva because you have mistreated the widows and the orphans and you have been crooked in your justice. Again, we find similarities with what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. God was saying to the Jews, you've got to change this. You're so busy all the time. As the Gemara says, they were doing, learning lots and lots of Torah. And they were keeping all the commandments between God and God. Yeah, very nice, wonderful. Whoa, give yourself a round of applause. But your Beinodim Lechaver, as they say, your interpersonal relationships, nothing to write home about. You're crooked, you're cheating. You do evil to your fellows, you're the offspring of evil. Quite a harsh term, the offspring of evil. And God is warning them, this is what I care about. Ah, Torah, mitzvahs, yeah, great. I don't need your offerings. I don't need your Shabbos, worthless to me. If you're not going to look after the poor and the widows and the oppressed, that's what I care. And that's how we linked it to the Sedra, how Moshe Rabbeinu was getting exasperated. He couldn't help the Jews live side by side in a peaceful, harmonious society. He couldn't do it himself. He had to get help. And that's what they chose to be the inspiring prophetal talk before Tisha B'Av. That's what I care about. I care about how you get on with each other. I care about how you do your justice. Do you favor the rich and the powerful and trample down the poor and the oppressed? Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik, who used to be the Ruv, as they call him, the Rav of YU, brought out a sefer called Halachic Man. And there he says something very interesting. I saw this quoted in the Chief Rabbi of England's Pre-Yomim No-Ro'im booklet that he sent out a few years ago. And he asks, what is the job of a rabbi? What's the job of a rabbi? Ah, I thought, This is an easy one. I'll get this. Well, Jabba Dabba, yeah. Teach the community Torah. Yeah, lead the services. Help with the observance of the mitzvot. Am I right? These are things you would say when the search committee, well, what's the job of a rabbi? Yeah, okay. That's what we'll put on the job spec. Okay. But no. No. He says, Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik, the dean of YU, living in our times, in our days, not some previous rabbi from the Middle Ages. No, previous. In our generation, said the job of a rabbi is to look after the poor and redress the imbalance of the oppressed. And I thought, whoa, take a step back a minute. It's the job of a rabbi. Really? To look after the poor? Redress the imbalance of the oppressed? And I thought, yes, of course. It fits in. It's what Moshe Rabbeinu was complaining about all those years ago. It was what the prophet is imploring the Jewish people to change, and what the rabbis selected to be our pre-Tisha B'Av infused message. Because it's very important how we deal. And if you look at the Haftarah for Yom Kippur, again, Day of Atonement, you'd have thought the Haftarah, the portion they choose from the prophets, will be, woo, fire and brimstone, as they say. Better do repentance, you better love God, all that sort of stuff, or I'm coming after you, you know. That's why they say people come to shul 3 times a year, it's all death and destruction, they never come back the rest of the year. You would have expected that sort of thing. No. The same idea. You're crooked with how you deal with people. You pervert the course of justice. As God says, I can't have that. Not in my world. Not in my Jewish nation. No, 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 no. You think it's all right to wear your talis over your head. Sits is flying around, hitting everyone in the eyes as you walk. You think it's all right to have the beard. Masking the annoyed frown, perhaps, we could say. Yeah, very nice. Round of applause. Take my hat off to you. That's not what it's about. It's about how you treat people. How you get on with everybody. How do you go about obtaining justice for people who are cheated in life? And it also struck me, Moshe Rabbeinu was a pretty great man. Pretty great man. He presided over a generation that witnessed God coming to Har Sinai and speaking. Wow, what would I give for that? They saw it. They heard it. They got what we wish for, didn't they? They got what we yearn and strive for. To see God, to feel Him. They got it. They got it in waves, as they say. And even with a Moshe Rabbeinu, a man as great as him who performed the miracles, he could defeat Pharaoh. Easy. He could defeat the great king Sichon and Og. Piece of cake. But get the Jewish nation to get on with each other. He couldn't do it alone. He couldn't do it. He couldn't do it. And that's why 1200 years later God said, I can't take this anymore. It's too much for me as well. I'm going to destroy your temple. And that's why a further 1967 years down the line, we are still here in Charleston, South Carolina, as wonderful and as picturesque as it is, and not in Israel, rebuilt with a temple. Because we still have these traits that are ingrained in us. Maybe that's why it calls us the offspring of evil. It's in our genes. It's in our DNA. We can't help it. Maybe. But we've got to try. We've got to do our bit to see. Maybe. I know everyone here has been super friendly to me and my wife, and I'm so grateful. It's wonderful. Everyone's been so nice. And it's great. But it's more than that. It's in general, as a Jewish people as a whole. Look at our justice systems. You don't need me to touch on various different things that are going on in the Jewish world justice-wise. You don't need me to mention them. Some of the imbalances, shall we put it kindly, that are going on, that we read about when we open a newspaper or log on to the internet, we know what's going on. And I think when I hear of these cover-up stories, that they could be missing the boat. Because this would be a wonderful opportunity. It's the same idea. What goes on today, I'm not talking individual cases, every individual case is different, but in general terms, what's going on today could be the same as what's gone on centuries. Times of the temple, and even in the times of Moshe, the great, amazing Moshe. That'd be a great title for a movie, wouldn't it? He couldn't do it alone. He wasn't able to raise up the Jewish people. And we're still suffering from that today. So if we could perhaps take that lesson to heart and to try when we get the chance, because we're not always presented with the chance performing the mitzvah of justice and redressing the imbalance of the oppressed. As Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik put it, we don't always get that opportunity every time, every minute of the day. But when that opportunity comes a-knocking, we better be in. We better have our headphones off. Better not have the music blaring. We better hear the call of justice. Because it is something that has been deeply ingrained in our DNA. Something that's so difficult to change. But just as now medical science is advancing, and as they say, medical science advances, technology advances. 100, 200, 300 years ago, when you said God could hear you, God can see you, God knows what you're doing, you see a video of your life, people couldn't imagine it, couldn't visualize it. Now, it's recorded, I can listen to it whenever, I can put it on the website, people in the end of Australia can hear it. The idea, the visualization that God can hear, God can see, that's all very real now. We fly up in planes, it's easy. That's how it could understand when we say God will take us back on eagle's wings. Aeroplanes, they look like eagles. Hopefully they don't flap too much if we're on the plane, but still. So I think also advances in medical science also go hand in hand with Jewish learning. And in the same way as now sort of research to change people's DNA patterns and to change disease patterns, am I right? Sort of things like that. Then hopefully when we be zocher, to change our internal DNA. The DNA that is needs changing, that has been ingrained and uprooted really down in the depths of our psyche for all these hundreds and thousands of years. And we need to change it. And when we be zocher to come to the sea, Jerusalem in its heyday, that is something we cannot imagine. We might be able to put our computer visual image of what the temple might look like, but we cannot begin to understand what it would be like to be able to sit down and go, look, there's the temple. Here's my little sheep. I'm going to offer it as a sacrifice. To be able to hear the song of the Levites is something we all yearn for, and hopefully it is something we will see speedily in our days. V'nomar Amen. So as promised, I will now turn off the recording so people